everything. Did you remember to sleep? What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art, art, art. Go kick.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, sponsored throughout January by our wonderful friends at the Dolphin Theatre in Auckland. Check them out at dolphintheatre.org.nz to see what they've got coming up this year. Now, Kick Arts is New Zealand's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz. Then make sure you check us out at kickarts.org.nz to find out what art is happening in your area, as well as how you can support us to stay on air or perhaps sponsor a month of episodes. Now tonight we catch up with the busy arts people from around the motu, and we have a trip down memory lane with some legendary Kiwi classics for our song choices. But first, we're going to launch into a brand new single from one of our favourite Kick Arts supporters. It's the AJ Sound with Light It Up.
She said she wanna die for me, so why she gotta lie to me? This bullshit ain't gon' fly with me. Light it up. She said she wanna cry for me, but why she gotta lie to me? Now I'm way too fucking high for me. Light it up.
another week, and this time you're beaming in from a different part of the country. What mischief are you up to in Christchurch this week?
Well, by the time this goes to air, I will have just finished the first week of the Stage Antics Summer Pilot Program. So I'm currently sitting in the wardrobe room, actually, at Showbiz Christchurch, which is where we are rehearsing for the week with our 22 students who actually are from around the country. We've got kids from Invercargill, Wiesel, Nelson, Christchurch and Auckland here working on this musical, and we performed, will be performing it on Friday night, so that will be done. And I, by Sunday, will have winged my way to Wellington to start the process all over again with 36 kids in Wellington. So there you go.
Brilliant. Good start to your year, keeping you busy.
Definitely. And, you know, we've got, it's amazing, obviously, now that a lot of parents are back to their 9-to-5 jobs, lots of inquiries starting to come in for after-school classes and different things. So I know that I'm getting lots of inquiries about people wanting to do after-school drama and musical theatre. So if you're a company out there that runs a studio or provides after-school arts in any way, shape or form, we'd love to talk to you about your company and what you're offering.
Yeah, so absolutely. Yeah. And remember, we are a podcast, not just a live show, so it's covered all over New Zealand. Now, Emma, last night I trekked to the town hall for what I thought was a stand-up comic show. A comedian, Alan Cumming, who you may remember from the TV series The Good Wife, was here in New Zealand, and he was here promoting a film that he was premiering at the Rialto, and then had a comedy night. Walk into the town hall to discover a full band on stage, which totally surprised me because I didn't realise how much of a Broadway star he was. And it was fascinating afterwards Googling, and, you know, he's recently just finished doing the MC role in Cabaret, and he has his own nightclub and everything. Oh, what a great night. And it was one of those surprises. You come for one thing and you end up with this entire night of fabulous Broadway music interlinked with beautiful stories from all these famous people. The sad thing is, because we don't know him that well, Town Hall was barely a quarter full. They moved us all from wherever we'd purchased our seats all down the front because he wanted an intimate experience. And it was extremely intimate. You were up close and personal. But that didn't stop his energy, so full credit to him. Absolutely great night out.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's one that I would have been keen to have seen if I was in Tamaki Makaurau. But yeah, awesome.
Love and those surprises.
And I see that you've pledged a little bit of a resolution that you're going to try and see more theatre and different kinds of theatre in 2023.
Yeah, the goal is, you know, we're out of this COVID time now. We need to go back to seeing lots of different things, broaden our horizons, and like last night, have those wonderful surprise moments. You might get the odd dud along the way, but they can be entertaining too.
Well, and the thing is too, we're all performers, and we know when we perform that we like an audience. So, you know, if we expect people to come and see our thing, it's actually quite important that in return you go and support other people.
Yeah, totally, totally. And there's lots coming up. Speaking of which, if you're organising one of these festivals coming up, make sure you get in touch soon. We're still pre-recording the show, so we need to book you in because there is Pride Festival, Fringe Festival, Auckland Festival, the AV Festival and the International Cultural Festival all coming up in the next 3 months. And that's just to name a few.
And that's just in Tamaki Makaurau, let alone what's happening throughout the rest of the country.
Yeah, so email us now, info@kickarts.org.nz, so we can chat. But right now we've got another night of variety to entertain you. Shall we kick off with our first interview?
Let's kick it off.
Well, Emma, I'm getting a bit of deja vu today about this sense of how fast time has passed, because it feels like only yesterday we were chatting with the Pump House and Shoreside Theatre about Shakespeare in the Park last year, but we're already at 2023, and joining us this week to chat all about it is the fabulous Terry, who is playing the hostess in The Merry Wives of Windsor. Welcome to Kick Arts, Terry.
Thank you so much for having me.
Look, it's great to have you. And before we unpack the shows, for anyone that doesn't know what Shoreside get up to, tell us, what is Shakespeare in the Park?
Absolutely. We are a whole group of really, really dedicated Shakespeare lovers from all walks of life. And we always have two shows going on. This year, it's a comedy and a tragedy. We like to vary it a little bit. And we just absolutely love using the gorgeous lake and the Pump House Theater. The amphitheater is absolutely the most perfect place for Shakespeare. And it's a really, really lovely time.
It is. It's a beautiful space. And it kind of, there's something really relaxing and tranquil about sitting out there and then enjoying some theater in an outdoor space in summer.
Absolutely. You've got people of all ages, people who are just discovering the Pump House and Shakespeare in the Park, and then you have people who have been coming for years and years and years and years. So it's beautiful. You can come out, have like a picnic beforehand, and then just enjoy the space. Hopefully the weather will just keep improving. And so the summer will be an absolutely gorgeous, like you said, relaxing space. For us to give you some, I would say high culture, but there are so many like racy jokes in Merry Wives and really, really, like bad dad jokes. So it's, you know, it's Shakespeare, but it's totally approachable as well.
Brilliant. So let's unpack that. So this year you're doing Antony and Cleopatra and the Merry Wives of Windsor, and it's running from the 21st of January through into the 18th of February. You're in the Merry Wives. So tell us, for anyone that hasn't picked that one up before, what's the premise or storyline?
Sure. It's one of Shakespeare's, it's not done very often, and it should be because it's absolutely hilarious. Falstaff, who a lot of people will remember from Henry IV and Henry V, Falstaff is kind of reincarnated. He's an old, in our play, not so old, but kind of a worn out knight at this point, and he's a little low on funds, and so he decides that he's going to woo two women. I don't know if he knows that they're besties, but they're best friends and they tell each other everything. So he goes and woos these two women, trying to gain their money. The problem is, like I said, they know each other and are best friends, but also they're married as well. And one of them has an incredibly jealous husband. So hilarity ensues there. And then like Shakespeare's other comedies, there's always kind of the servants, the lower class people who round out the dirty jokes, and they kind of bring it down for the masses. But even the Falstaff line with the titular Merry Wives, full of all kinds of silliness and jokes. So it's something for everyone for sure. And one of the things I think we do a really beautiful job about, and we owe this to our directors and stage managers, is I think that no matter what your age, kids, primary school, we even have one of my good friend's kids who's 5 came last year. We have beautiful costumes and approachable. We make it approachable. Yeah. So the language is something that kind of gets in the way. But we do our best to make that really, really easy and just fun. Have a lot of fun with it.
I love how you said that. Approachable is a really good way of describing sort of the tape that each year, you know, the Shakespeare in the Park works for. And it's really lovely because, as you say, you can bring somebody here to totally understand the story in a fun way. Now, you play the hostess. Tell us about the hostess.
Yes. So we've done a lot of gender bending, which is very Shakespearean actually anyway. And so it's actually the host, but I'm playing her as obviously the hostess as a woman. My inspiration is Helena Bonham Carter in Sweeney Todd.
Oh, nice.
So, kind of, you know, a woman of a certain age, kind of past her prime, but she's always on the lookout for a quick buck. She's always on the lookout for somebody's pocket to legitimately or maybe not so legitimately pick and add to her bank account. She's also way, way, way too flirty with everybody. So, you know, awkwardness ensues, and she's just a really fun character. So she owns, I'm making it that, you know, she's the stereotypical merry widow. Her husband has since passed, and she's still looking for a good time. And so she owns the Garter Inn now, and that's where a lot of people from Windsor, from the village, will come and hang out. And she also is kind of a troublemaker. She likes to... I don't know, like a puppet master, and get people at each other, just for the sake of stirring the pot. So it's a really fun character.
It does. It sounds really cool to play. Where did your arts journey begin? What sparked it off? And I'm curious, when did Shakespeare get in the mix?
Absolutely. I was a lover of theater. My parents were wonderful about taking us to go and see everything. Growing up in Miami, Florida, in the U.S., it was, we went to a lot. My parents are both from New York, and so we did a lot of theater going. Yeah. And I was, school plays I was always in. And then in high school, I really got into it. Eliza Doolittle in Pygmalion, and Annie Sullivan, Helen Keller's teacher in The Miracle Worker. And then it just kind of got lost at university. I took theater classes, but it was always kind of the study of. And as an English teacher, I love Shakespeare so much. That's why I actually fell in love with teaching English in the first place. It was the literature part of it. And then in 2018, I had already moved to New Zealand. I was finding my feet as an expat, and I saw Shoreside's posting for an audition. And I said, well, let's give this a go. Like any good Kiwi, if they don't like me, fine. If I'm terrible, fine. They'll tell me in the nicest possible Kiwi way. But yeah, let's give it a go. And so that was actually where I met all of my Shoreside family, was 2018 with Henry V. And Carol Dumbledon was our director, and she was just this stalwart of the theater, and she was absolutely wonderful. So I was very lucky to work with her, with Agatha Christie as well. And I was just hooked.
Yeah.
I'm a teacher, and so, you know, the start of school coincides with the season, and it's just a crazy time, but I can't not do it. It's an absolute joy.
Love it. Now, I'm not sure if you can answer this question, but our wonderful Kick Arts friend James Bell is the director. How do you think James sort of, I guess, brings a new spin each time on something that is so well known? What's he done to make it sort of his, I guess?
Yes. He's so wonderful, and I've worked with him. I think this is the fourth or fifth time that we've worked together. And so he has quite a signature directorial style. I think one of the things that he's really good at is using the space. So the amphitheater has a right stair, a left stair, and then a center staircase. And then it also has two towers. We call them towers, kind of elevated platforms, and then a back of the stage entrance. And so there are people coming and going and coming and going, and you never know where the next scene is going to pop up from. So he's very much a consummate comedy director. I mean, he's done so much more, but he's really good about using Shakespeare's scant stage direction and putting it in a whole new physical place. where it's not just, you know, pop-up globe, the globe, and all the places that we have seen Shakespeare done is usually, you know, one stage, maybe they come out into the audience, but we're so lucky to have the amphitheater. And so when y'all come and you see, our play, you'll be immersed in it. And I think James is really good about involving the audience, because that's what would have happened 400 years ago. Hopefully they'll boo at Falstaff. They'll laugh with the wives. They'll get a little uncomfortable at the hostess walking around flirting with everything that moves. So I really think that that's kind of James Bell's signature style, is really digging into the text and finding new ways for us physically to get involved with the language.
Brilliant. Terry, you have sold it so well.
I hope so.
Yeah, you know, you really have. And I think someone listening that's like, oh, should I go? Not sure about Shakespeare. It's a great night out. It's outdoors. It's something different. As you said, take your picnic. And then at the same time, get to see Shakespeare in a really cool way with some fabulous local talent. People need to head to the Pump House Theatre or to ShoresideTheatre.com to get your tickets. And I note that children under 12 are free when accompanied by a paying adult. So a great chance to expose our younger generation to some good Shakespeare as well. So head to ShoresideTheatre.com. They're playing from the 21st of January to the 18th of February. There is Anthony and Cleopatra as well. So you've got two choices there. Terry, I wish you a fabulous sunny season with lots of sunshine, a little bit of cloud just for that shelter, but nothing with rain.
Thank you. We will take it very, very appreciatively. Thank you.
Awesome. Go well.
Oh,
amazing. It's almost 2 years, I'm thinking, since we had this amazing arts practitioner on our show.
Yeah.
2 years ago, it was a boosted campaign to be able to help fund the making of the show, and now the show is making its way to Tamaki Makaurau. Welcome to Kick Arts. Welcome back to Kick Arts, Adam.
Kia ora, Emma. Yeah, it's great to be back. I love every time I get to come on and have a chat to you guys, so thanks for having us again.
No worries at all. So for our listeners, tell us a little bit about what is Man Lesson.
Yeah, sure. So it's a project that's been spanning about 7 years of my life now. When I first came out as transgender, I was in my final year of acting school, and I thought, hey, I'm in the business of telling stories, and I feel as though what's about to happen to me might be a story worth telling. So I hit up some documentary filmmaker friends of mine and struck up a conversation with Ben Sarton, who's I knew them because they were like we'd done rock climbing together, and they rode unicycles and did lots of weird adventures. I'd seen a video of them that they made riding their unicycle down Mount Taranaki, and I was like, that sounds like a cool person to hang out with. So I hit them up, and they were keen. So, we've been making a documentary together following my transition for the last 7 years, and we were reaching the point when it needs to be finished, and I decided to make a show that would constitute the reflective interview from me now looking back at those early days of my transition. So that's what it is. The show is a combination of, you know, showing some of this archaic footage from 7 years ago, baby queer me, and then me sort of telling the story of what happened and sharing my reflections from now.
Fantastic. Now, you've already had a season in Ponaki, right?
We've had 2 seasons, yes. Yeah. So the first, we had a debut season at Bats, which was 8 shows long and super lovely. I just love being in that space. And then we took part in the Whangarei Fringe Festival as well.
Right. So what's different about what you're bringing, or is it the same what you're bringing to Basement?
Yeah, well, each time I do the show, and I don't mean each season, but I mean each performance, it's just me up there, and I'm just telling my story, right? So every time I do it, I tweak it a bit because I learn what I think by saying what I think.
Yeah.
And then the next time it's slightly different. But then kind of each season I've learned a new kind of chunk of information about what's important about me now and what I think about what happened then. So it tightens each time and grows each time.
Nice.
Can that answer your question?
Yeah,
same, different.
Have you noticed different reactions in the different cities, and are you expecting anything different here in Auckland?
Reactions to different cities? Not really. I mean, Bats is like a fringy arts crowd, and Whangarei Fringe was a fringy arts crowd.
Nice.
And they're just, everyone was super lovely and supportive and wonderful. I've had really special audiences so far. I think what I'm expecting in Tamaki is I'm back in my hometown, like artistic hometown. And so really important close friends that have been asking to see the show for a long time doing backflips because they finally get to see it. So, yeah, it'll feel like quite the homecoming for me, I think. I love that space. We're in the studio at Basement, and it's super intimate, which is exactly right for this show. I just feel like I'm coming home, and I've, like, run the show in. So I'm pumped. I think I'm going to peak out in a major way with this Auckland season.
Fabulous. So tell us, what's happening with the documentary? Where is that at?
Yeah, so following the Wellington season, Ben, the documentary maker, did some interviews with key characters from my life that are like major characters in the film after they'd seen the show. So Ben interviewed my parents and my partner from the time of the filmmaking. And Ben has one final interview to shoot. There are 2 more interviews to shoot. One is Ben interviewing me with no audience present, and the other one is me interviewing Ben, obviously with no audience present. And then Ben can enter the final stages of editing.
Awesome. And what is the hope, plan, dreams for the documentary?
That's a very good question. The first and most pressing is to find the right producer. That's quite a key team player that we don't have at this stage. But we're quite choosy about who we want to bring on board. You know, it's a relatively intimate story and we have quite a strong ethical values base behind the making of it. We really want it to be distributed, like freely distributed, rather than it to be a revenue generating thing. I'd love for it to be shown in film festivals around the world. But yeah, I don't want it to go up somewhere that people have to pay to see it. I want people to be able to just access. Yeah.
If you looked back and reflected right back to the time where, you know, you had your boosted campaign and everyone's supporting you through to now where you're outperforming and sharing the story, what do you think would be your biggest learning that you would give advice to someone else who's thinking of telling any sort of story but use this medium to do it?
Which medium is that, documentary?
Well, I guess both, documentary or you know, standing up and performing. What's been the learning that you've taken away from this process?
Yeah, right. So it's a very confronting story that I have to tell. Like, I'm looking back at a really tumultuous period of my life when I fell apart in a major way, and not only I, like a lot of people who were close to me were impacted by that, and I had a lot of false run-ups to finishing the storytelling and getting it up on stage. But the psychological barriers for me were massive. So I needed the right team around me to put this thing on. The learning I'd say is make sure that the people that you bring around you share a similar artistic vision, but are also healing people to be near you.
Yeah. Nice.
Because, you know, at the very start, one of the other reasons you had kind of come about doing this project was because when you entered this time in your life, there was nothing for you to help support. Well, you found that there was a gap in the gap out there for information, right? So how has it been? Because I'm sure being in Christchurch and in Ponaki, in Whangarei, in those kind of places, how has the community itself reacted around you? Like, has there been lots of people come to you and say, help?
Not so many come and say help, because I think that the trans community is one of those with really great need, but the needs are very specific and without sort of like enough exposure to our communities and education around sort of who we are and what we need. Health practitioners get it wrong all the time. Counselors get it wrong. So the best support is from our peers. And so we lean on each other quite heavily. And then we're also aware that us with little resources are leaning on others with little resources, which is kind of this weird recipe for burnout. So I actually haven't had very many people approach me directly and say, help, I'm at the beginning stages of this transition, or I'm going through a crisis or whatever, because I think we are pretty aware of the impact of that ask on the other person. And so we try to be rather intentional about where we go to try to get the right help, and like finally curate our support networks to best look after us. So I haven't had randoms come up to me and be like, help, but I have had people get thoroughly impacted by the show and then go for a walk afterwards with their best mate for 2 hours crying and talking about their lives, you know.
Wow.
And so it'll trigger things in people by sort of exposing, revealing the like deepest interior of that identity revolution that then they need some support to restabilize. So, I mean, there's like audience care warnings everywhere on the events, on the ticketing sites, and physically we have a lot of like emotional support material in poster form and pamphlet form in the spaces that we're performing in. Yeah, just because those support networks are so critical. Yeah.
That's awesome and great safety and fantastic environment feel for anyone coming along to the show.
Yeah. And what about the future? What's, apart from, you know, getting this documentary completed, what's next on the horizon for you?
Yeah, good question, Stephen. So I've been out of the arts game for a lot of COVID, believe it or not. I've made this project and one other when I was kind of making, I don't know how many a year, but it was just what I was doing all the time. And I've been without an agent for that time. So I'm inviting agents to come and see this show. I would love to start doing more arts work now that it seems as though the world has stabilized a bit. It's just I'm so happy doing it, and I want to do more silly projects and team projects rather than sort of solo stuff. We're also pitching Man Listens at Pans this year, so we'll see if it gets picked up through them.
Awesome. Brilliant. That would be very cool.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be cool, eh?
Yeah. So tell our listeners, how can they find out more about Man Listens, get tickets for the Auckland season, find out more about you?
Yeah, sure. So have a Google, Man Listens, the live show. I'm performing at Basement Theatre the 7th to the 11th of February, which is rather soon. You can find us on the Basement website or Eventbrite or the Auckland Pride website, because we're taking part in Auckland Pride. Yeah. If you Google Adam Rowey Man Listens, you'll also have a raft of articles come up from the past, I don't know how many years, while this project has been kicking away. So you can find out a bunch more about the wider project by Googling my name.
Fabulous. Well, I can't wait myself to be sitting in the audience and finally see this journey, which, you know, we've been a part of for so many years. And wish you all the best for finishing painting your parents' house. I hope the weather plays nice in Taranaki while you're painting, because if it's anything like it is here in Tamaki Makaurau, you wouldn't be painting.
Yeah, it's terrible at the moment, but I think I'll have patches of sunshine enough to get some work done. Yeah, thanks, Emma. It'll be really special to have you there. I'm really looking forward to it.
Fantastic. And we will see, hopefully, our listeners along at the Basement as well. Man Listens, 7th to 11th of February. Get there.
Brother Bellas in the back, sweet singers in the front, cruising down the freeway in the hot, hot sun. Suddenly, red blue lights flash us from behind. Loud voice booming, please step out onto the line. Ballet bridge words of comfort, Cena just hides her eyes. Policeman taps the shades inside a Chevy 69. How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre. Destination unknown, as we're calling for some gas. Officially placed a poster, reveals a smile from the back. Elephants and acrobats, lions, snakes, monkey. Village speaks righteous, Sister Cena says funky. How bizarre. How bizarre. How bizarre. The elephants sit down, people jump and jive, and the clowns are stuck around. TV news and cameras, there's choppers in the sky. Marines, police, reporters, ask where, far and wide. Bella yells, we're out of here, Cena says right on. Making moves and starting grooves before they knew we were gone. Jumped into the Chevy, headed for big lights. Wanna know the rest, hey, by the rights. How bizarre.
Well, it seems like only yesterday Wendy and I were chatting about Mixit, but I'm guessing it may even have been nearly a year as time flies by. Wendy Preston, producer of Mixit, it's great to have you back on the show. Welcome back to Kick Arts.
Kia ora, and it's great to be back on Kick Arts.
Was it a year ago? Is it?
Yeah, I think so. But we've been in such a weird kind of spatial time warp.
Yeah.
Thanks, COVID. So everything has got a little bit warped. But yeah, I think maybe last summer we were chatting.
Brilliant. Now, hopefully our listeners have been checking out our social media posts throughout the week and have gone along today to support the Mixit Summer Creative Project. And what we're going to do today is unpack it a little bit. So, Wendy, first of all, for those that haven't heard you before, tell us a little bit about who and what is Mixit.
So Mixit's now in its 18th year.
Wow.
19 years ago, I was shoulder tapped by a philanthropist, and given my years as a professional performing arts practitioner, I've always done a lot of cross-cultural work, and I've always worked with young people, and amongst working with the professionals and teaching at tertiary level, I've always enjoyed working with the rangatahi age zone, because they're really challenging and they keep me young, and they're going through such extraordinary transitions, first-time transitions, and creativity is powerful. So I've been working in that space for over 40 years. So in 2005, I got shoulder tapped by a philanthropist who had just returned from Europe, and she was really curious as to what was happening in Auckland, her city, with former refugee youth. And she was really interested in, was there a kind of creative project within the support landscape that supported them, because she could really see, particularly in Europe at that time, that a real weak link societally were disenfranchised young people, particularly from other backgrounds. So she'd been around the riots in Paris and all that kind of thing. So she came back to Auckland and said, well, what's going on here? So she contacted me to do a period of what became 8 months research, and which was really to draw the landscape of what was and what wasn't happening, what services were being provided, where were the gaps, and what did young people want, and what were they not getting. And then I also went in that period to London and Manchester and met up with some very long-standing successful community arts projects working with performing arts and asylum-seeking youth. And I learned a whole ton of stuff, which consolidated with what I already knew. But I had to translate that, because what happens in the UK is vastly different from our little in the South Pacific. So I just kept meeting people, and I brought a really great network of artists and young people, particularly from the former refugee communities, and parents and social workers. And we just started talking, and I started to pick up hire vans and take van loads of kids to things like Black Grace dance performances and theatre, and Red Leap were just starting, and they did a big show called The Arrival, and I'd take these young people so they could experience this kind of thing. And then we started to do little workshops. And then this philanthropist, this wonderful woman from the fledgling trust, Charmaine Barnett, went, okay, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's make this. Or rather, would you do this, please? Like, I was like, whoa, who's going to pay for this? And she went, I will pay for it. I will commit to getting its foundations really solid. So in February 2006, we started. We have never missed a Saturday session We'd missed one summer, and that was the summer when COVID first came.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we have not missed a beach since. So now, gosh, we're about to do our 18th year. So we've really, you know, gone a long way. We've worked with thousands and thousands of young people, had hundreds of really top-level, wonderful artists, multidisciplinary artists, and it's been this incredible journey that's seen a lot of transformation of young people's lives.
Beautiful. And sitting with you is such one of these examples of young people. Sajal, it's great to have you here on Kick Arts. And perhaps can you tell us a little bit about who you are as a person and your journey that led you into coming into the Mixit project?
Yeah, well, I found out about Mixit when I was in 2019, when I recently moved to New Zealand. And it was great. You know, since 2019, I've not skipped a set of decision or a summer project because it's influenced me as a person of who I am. And, you know, it's helped me find my passions in acting and theatre. So, you know, it's just a place of comfort and a place of support where I can go.
That's cool. Now, you've been busy working this summer on a project called Home. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what we would have expected to see in the performances that have shown today?
Yeah, well, the project is about home, right? So what do you do at your home? What makes you feel at home? It's that kind of thing. And, you know, talking about home, I feel like Mixit is my second home in a way.
Nice.
It's a place where I can feel supported and I feel loved and I feel comfortable. So it's like, you know, it is my home after all.
Oh, well, Wendy, that's the biggest tick any producer but also funder wants to hear, that an organisation is creating a safe space that someone feels at home. That's your biggest sign-off for the week done. Well done. So
is that again, would you think?
Yeah. We'll put that in writing. So tell us, Sajal, what sort of forms, I guess, of theatre are we going to expect inside the home performance? Because you use a wide range, don't you?
Yeah, it's, well, everything that you saw in the performances, it's made from scratch. So, you know, we start a two-week immersive project and it's everything's made from scratch. It's whatever comes off from mixes. So from us as the cast, you know, it's our ideas and our opinions on the table mixed with a little bit of dancing, you know, and it's just devising through and adding on layers to make that performance.
So it has a real physical theatre base.
This
summer, every summer we have different artists come in as guests. This summer we've got the wonderful Margaret Mary Hollins working with Mel Bailey, who's our current creative program leader. He's a young, wonderful young South African actor, musician. And Margaret Mary is very familiar with the devising process. That is our go-to. And then we've got, who we got? Elsa, we got?
Andrew Cezanne, a choreographer.
Brilliant. So you're in very safe hands. And for our listeners, you know, I mean, Emma and I have done a lot in the devising sort of scene, but the hardest bit's always deciding what goes in, stays in, and gets tweaked and changed. Can one of you tell me how have you decided what's left on the cutting room floor versus, you know, what ends up in there? And do you collectively decide that, or is that Margaret's role to sort of pull that piece together?
Well, we do a lot of collectively. We make sure every day as part of the process that there's a whole circle up and everybody and all the mixers get an opportunity to say, I like this and I want to develop that.
Nice.
My favorite bit of the day and I'd really like to do more of that choreography, or I loved it when I saw that happen in that little devised task. So, but you know, our biggest challenge is the lack of time.
Yeah.
So as you're quite right, time becomes a very hard taskmaster, and sometimes it can be the most brilliant ideas. And there's simply, we have to recognize quite swiftly that there's no time to develop them as to they should. So we have to go the editing process of choosing ideas that are going to be able to be realized fairly quickly.
Yeah.
and that, but still it contribute to the whole. So, yes, it is a rather brutal editing process. And what we have a little bit of a saying of it in Mixit is that sometimes you have to gently put a great idea into the graveyard of excellent ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Sajal, from your experience over these years with Mixit, what is the sort of thing that you take away from them as an organisation to put into your everyday life or your future journey or what you want to do, hopefully in the arts?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the biggest things that Mixit has helped me found is to be comfortable with yourself. You know, be confident in who you are and what your opinions are. And also, you know, just when in everyday life, it teaches you how to be confident. You know, it's like giving me a lot of skills, real life skills like confidence, leadership, you know, all those sort of things that I can sort of use in my day-to-day life.
Yeah, 100%. And those skills are so big when you're going for a job interview or an audition or anything, to be able to be confident and to be shown as a leader. But I can see one with some humility, you know, you're a humble soul as well, which is absolutely fantastic in the arts, you know, so have that balance. So keep it up.
We're not actually, our primary goals are socialization and belonging.
Yeah.
It's just the waka.
Yeah, totally.
So we have young people like Sajal who are just have a burning passion and they're inspired to become artists and develop some very kick arts skills. but then we have other young people that they're not as interested in the arts at all. They want to come and make friends and belong to something that is cool and is fun. And so they're getting skills of communication and all these vital life skills that are necessary for their successful assimilation and integration into our communities as New Zealanders.
Mm.
But particularly integration rather than assimilation, rather than having to become the same, it's how to retain who they are and how they juggle all their multiple identities. They need communication. They need to be able to have that self-confidence, have that, and start to also develop the skills of lateral thought, you know, and problem solving and teamwork, all stuff that you have to have as vital ingredients in a devised creative process.
Yeah. So what's next on the horizon, Wendy, for 2023? Once you pack this one up and celebrate, what's next?
We never have much of a breathing space. Mm. We carry on. Our core commitment to the core program is absolutely rock solid. So the core program will be turning and facing the International Cultural Festival that will be happening in April. So we'll bring in some artists to help prepare for that. The extra layer we have around our core program that we've been working on for the last 2 or 3 years is our alumni. We have a very strong alumni team now, and they are getting regular training, facilitation training, and are involved in our outreach program around the country. So we are going and developing partnerships in places like Palmerston North and Nelson, and strengthening existing partnerships in Christchurch and Wellington, places like that. And working with youth workers who in turn are working with the diversity of youth in their small towns. So we are really trying to contribute to that and using our alumni, the ones that are co-facilitating and running the floor. So, yeah, lots of work in that regard alongside the mothership in Auckland.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Look, I always love talking to you. I love what your organisation stands for. And look, 18 years coming into 19 says it all, doesn't it? So congratulations. By the time this goes to air, your project would have wrapped and I know it would have been a success. So we'll look forward to catching up with your next programme. If someone wants to find out more about Mixit and get involved, where can they track you down?
Where do they go, Sajal?
Well, we've got our Instagram Mixit page, our website, mixit.co.nz, our Facebook Mixit page. You can DM us, email us, or Facebook message us on Facebook.
Our website's quite expansive. We have some beautiful pro bono support that works with us, and so it's loaded with videos and photos. Our alumni and our youth leaders, of which Sajal is one, they run all our Instagram and our social media posts. So you just got to dip in. And we just keep a very fresh flow of information, images, and videos.
Brilliant. Fabulous. Well, all the best for 2023, and hopefully we can catch up again before your next event with the International Cultural Festival.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. With the wonderful Glass Ceiling team on a regular basis, but I was really excited when the inbox filled with information of them expanding around Aotearoa, up north, down south, but tonight we're here to chat about the up north component. So welcome to Mariska, Sharon and Teal to Kick-Ups.
Thank you.
Now, for the benefit of our listeners, I'm actually quite jealous because we're all doing this on Zoom and they're all in fabulous destinations outdoors. So I've nabbed them from their holiday, so apologies for that, but it is with a good cause. Mariska, tell us a little bit about what Glass Ceiling Collective is, and then we'll talk about your new venture up north.
So Glass Ceiling is a charity organization that makes youth theatre possible for children from the age of, I remember the youngest, I think probably 6 till 21, with a disability or not with a disability. So it's a really inclusive environment they create, and they have workshops and shows that they create, and within an inclusive environment.
Brilliant. Our listeners will remember Emma talking all about it in December with their very special movie night here at the Aotea Centre to sort of wrap the year. And both Emma and I have seen your work. We understand how important it is. So why the journey north? What made you suddenly decide we're ready to head in that direction?
I'm not so sure where the idea came from, but I've been involved with glass ceiling when my daughter was participating on the North Shore and with the Warkworth show. And then we, so myself and my family moved up north to Whangarei. And I think what I understood from Mike and from Charlotte is that they received actually more funding to create more projects in New Zealand, and including Whangarei. And so we discussed with each other, like, oh, would it be nice to, you know, to have be involved to see if we could set up something in Whangarei? And fantastic. So here we are.
So as a parent yourself who's seen this firsthand, can you talk about sort of the impact it made on your family and what you've witnessed sort of from that side? Because it's really cool having a parent perspective in this mix.
Yeah, for me, it was a really, I actually didn't know what we actually signed up when my daughter started with it. And it was when we actually saw the show and all that whole process and how they organized everything. And it was just amazing to witness a beautiful, talented group of youngsters. What they can do.
Fantastic. So let's look and unpack what they can do. Sharon, you're busy teaching the acting and the singing, multitasking. So what will the students sort of participate in when they're working with you?
Well, we'll be doing sort of drama games, that sort of thing. We're going to start working towards a show. I'm not going to say the name of the show because that's got to be a surprise.
Cool.
Learning to use their bodies and to use their voices and that sort of thing, their emotions. Also, you know, vocally, I won't be going in depth into teaching singing because that's actually a long process.
Yeah.
But teaching them, again, different ways to use their voice so they're not straining and that sort of thing. I've been teaching singing in piano and drama for many, many years, so it's a bit of a passion for me. And I directed the youth show up here in Whangarei last year now, gosh.
Yeah.
which Mariska's daughter was involved in. That's where I sort of met them. And it was incredible. It was such an amazing experience. And these kids, we had sold out houses every night. The kids were incredible. We'd been nominated for a NAPTA award for the show. So, it's going to be fabulous. I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to it being fun. For the kids, because that was always my motto when I was teaching piano and so forth. It has to be fun. The lessons have to be fun or they don't come back, basically. Yeah.
Gone are the days of the long ruler as you're teaching the piano. Got that one wrong.
Yeah.
What first ignited your passion in the arts then? When did it start for you?
For me, I started when I was 6 years old playing the piano accordion, random instrument.
Yep, lovely family. I'm sure they love that.
It was my mother who got me into it. But I actually was involved with the piano accordion orchestra, which even got worse. But it took me overseas to Europe, all around the States, all around China, playing the piano accordion, would you believe?
Brilliant.
And then I took up singing when I was 10. And did my first musical in third form, which is year 9, and knew that right then was what I wanted to do, basically. And then I sort of fell into teaching it and realised that I had a gift for it, and especially working with kids, that was my absolute passion. And yeah, just been doing it ever since, really.
Brilliant. And do you still play the piano and cornet?
I can play it. I have one. I don't play it.
I don't know. All in favour that it's in this year's show, I think so. I
have lifelong friends that I made through playing the accordion. So
nice. I'm only mocking in a lovely way. I think it's fine. It's a great instrument, and I've used well. It's, you know, yes. It's like the violin. It's got to be played well before you enjoy it.
That's right, like the recorder.
So, Teal, take us through the movement and dance side, and how does this work, you know, with students coming in that are perhaps a little bit nervous to sort of move into that movement and dance space?
That's a good question. And I will say, I think it's okay to be nervous and I think it's okay to be scared. But the best things happen outside of our comfort zone. And it's really interesting. So my little brother has Williams syndrome and he was so terrified to do Moana, the musical. Our whole family was actually really terrified for him to do it. And I said, no, we cannot place these boundaries or put neurodiverse kids in a box and be like, you can't do this, because they can. And sometimes you just have to let them spread their wings. And I just promise that it will make them grow and it will make them happier. And especially as a sister, very similar to Mariska and Sharon, she works with neurodiverse kids, but I've seen the gaps. I've seen, you know, the sleepovers hasn't got invited to, you know, he's never had a hobby. I see the gaps, and Whangarei, to answer your question from before, Whangarei needs this. We need something like this for our youth. I don't really know if that actually answers.
Yeah, no, that's beautiful. So what's your background when it comes to dance and movement?
Great. So I have been dancing ever since I was 4, and I'm 24 now, so that's 20 years, which is just crazy. And in my teenage years, I got into competitive dancing. I've competed internationally. And I also, at university, I studied expressive arts. I've been teaching for the last 7 years. I love creating. I love seeing things come to life. I love kids. I love empowering them, making them feel confident, disciplined. And I'm very similar to Sharon. It's all about fun. You know, I would rather have 10 kids with smiley, happy faces that, you know, are enjoying it and loving it. You know, that's what I would rather, and that's what I'm really about. And I think that collectively we're all about. So if people are scared and they are shy, just give it a go. You know what I mean? Just let your kids try it. You know, there's no hurt in trying it.
Brilliant. So, Mariska, where are these new classes and how can people find out about them and book on in?
Okay, so this is a little bit, we are still in the process of organizing a venue, but we are hoping to start on the 18th of February. More information can be found on the Glass Ceiling Arts Collective.com website. And otherwise, we will be marketing a little bit more, contacting schools and everything to make sure that the message will go out. And so mid-February, we're hoping to start and we hope to have a venue ready and everything.
Brilliant. Well done, team. I'm absolutely delighted to see Glass Ceiling growing and growing. It's a fabulous organisation, and people should go and check out their website to find out more information. We'll let you go and continue your wonderful holidays. You've got a bit of time to the 18th of February, and once you have your venue, we'll pop that up on the Kick Art socials so that those details are there. Fabulous 2023, and we'll have to come up north and have a look at your show when it's on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very
I can remember last time I thanked you.
close enough. If I could have more time, we would brainstorm. And I love you tender, but we must walk away. Keeping you on my greeting card file. And if it were different, don't you know it ain't. Let's get on with it, love. Call me loyal. I'll say hello.
Let's check out a few things that have come into our inbox for our bulletins. And first of all, the Royal New Zealand Ballet kicks off its 70th anniversary celebrations with an 11-stop tour. Congratulations, RNZB. Opening up its 70th anniversary season by taking a fresh new production of the ever-popular Tutus on tour to 11 theatres across Auckland from Whangarei to Ashburton. Now, it opens in Kapiti on the 23rd of February before going to Hastings, Carterton, Gisborne, Whanganui, Hamilton, Blenheim, Nelson, Kerikeri, Ashburton and Whangarei. It looks back with affection at the ballet's early days and its travel through time. RAZB Artistic Director Patricia Barker has carefully curated a collection of works which encapsulate the history of ballet and her desire to share treasures from the ballet's recent past alongside works new and old which the dancers can't wait to perform. Now, to find out more, head to www.rnzb.org.nz. Now, the Auckland Pride Month is returning with a full festival program and now announced it's running with all sorts of events, gatherings and experiences from the 1st to the 26th of February. Defying a disruptive year, the festival will take over the summer of 2023 and energised and better than ever look with over 100 offerings designed to elevate the community, arts and tamaki makaurau at large. Auckland Pride 2023 boasts an expansive arts program that transcends mediums, disciplines and art forms, from drag artistry to the most experimental edges of live art, from plays to improv comedy, exhibitions to gigs and literary panels. Community events include a fantastic range of workshops, parties, speed dating and even a little bit of touch rugby. Sounds dangerous to me. Check it out. It's running from the 1st to the 26th of February. All information is available by looking up the Pride Festival on Google, Facebook and Instagram. And Turama is to return to Queen Street in February. Four-year-old Ali Sabri is one of the many Aucklanders thrilled to learn that the four elements of Turama will return to Queen Street on the 3rd of February, ushering in a significant month for Māori and Tamaki Makaurau. When the popular series of large-scale lighting pieces first lit up Queen Street in June 2022, Ali would ask his father to drive under the gateway multiple times so that he could witness the dual magic of the artistry over and over. Well, it's returning for the month of February to support the region's commemorations of the first signing of the Treaty of Waitangi on the 6th of February, 183 years ago. It is returning also to support the celebrations of Te Matini Heranga Whakaheringa Tanga Festival, a much-awaited event bringing the world's finest kapahaka performances to Eden Park from the 22nd to the 25th of February. So make sure you are checking it out by heading along Queen Street throughout February. Now, if you've got something to promote anywhere in the country, make sure you send us an email, info@kickarts.org.nz. I hope you're enjoying tonight's look back on Kiwi music. Here's another blast from the past.
I look at the sunrise, I look at the earth, I look at the
show, Stephen. So it's always interesting when one of us is away. We tend to have these random interviews by ourselves, which sometimes is good, and sometimes it's actually quite hard when you've got to interview sometimes by yourself because you've got to think of twice as many things to say.
You do, but, you know, it's great if you've got good guests, and I loved again this week that real mix of ages and different styles, I guess, of arts that we've had on. But I've been fascinated having you on this Zoom sitting in a costume room, and, you know, you've always had a love for costumes, but I think about how hard our costume and wardrobe teams work both in theatre and in film. What's been the hardest thing you've ever had to costume?
Oh, well, I think I did myself a disservice in a way, because when I started costuming quite a lot, every show had to be bigger and better. So, and I always wanted to do something a little bit spectacular and different. So, you know, Alice in Wonderland was an interesting one, trying to do my own take on Alice, not the typical blue gingham, you know, petticoat and pinafore kind of look. And the Mad Hatter being totally extreme. I think the Mad Hatter may have been the first time I used upholstery fabric to get all the different textures. The poor boy was so hot every night. He sweated through those costumes shopping because they were just so warm. But I think the most exciting show I ever did was when I decided to stage Othello steampunk, and I decided to make all the steampunk costumes. So it was using sandpaper to age things, spray paint, and then actually getting all the mechanical bits of clocks and making bits that strapped onto them that actually moved and did stuff. So it was authentic steampunk, not just bits tacked on. That was really, really exciting. But I've always done costuming on top of directing. So I don't know, kind of, it's always been a bit crazy until now. I'm so lucky. My role that I have at Ormiston Junior College in Auckland, where my role is to create the costumes, that's my focus. Nice. And it's been great. But, you know, I'm in the costume room at Showbiz. Now, this is a theatre company that is a community theatre company here in Christchurch. And they are so lucky because they've got the have had this committed team of amazing sewers and everything for years. And I look around the room and there's like 6 overlockers and 7 sewing machines, and they've all got a sewing station. Now, how many theatres can say that they actually have a sewing room with cutting tables?
Yeah, brilliant.
Everything, a full laundry. It's the most, they're so lucky down here at Showbiz.
That is so cool. So cool. Well, I wish you a fantastic week this week and next in Wellington. One day we'll be back in a room together, but until now, we'll catch you on the next Zoom. Remember to all our listeners, email us at info@kickarts.org.nz so we can schedule you in for the next few months, and have a fabulous week ahead. And as always, make sure you
go out and kick some arts.
Thinking about myself. sometimes. I'm cut off.
Sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah.